The Property Pod. Welcome to The Property Pod with MoneyWeb. The property sector is an ever-changing sector. And in this podcast series, your host, Suren Naidu, chats to movers and shakers in the property industry.
Welcome to The Property Pod. The listed property or real estate investments trust sector in South Africa is up around 25% year to date, according to the All Property Index, or LP, of the JSE. That's from a total return perspective. From a market cap position, the sector is up around 20% and its total market capitalization around 398 billion currently. Between 2018 and COVID 2020, the listed property sector was the worst performing asset class. However, the strong recovery has seen the sector return as the top performing asset class for 2021 year to date. Joining us now on this episode of the Property Pod is newly appointed fund manager and head of property at Stanlib, Nesi Chetty. We are talking about the sector's performance this year, including the winners and losers, and his hot stock picks. Welcome to the Property Pod, Nesi.
Thanks, Suren.
Congratulations on your new position at Stanlib. Nesi, listed property has staged quite a comeback. You've been covering the sector for over a decade. How would you describe the sector's performance this year after the fallout of 2020 due to COVID-19 and the lockdowns?
Yeah, so I think we must maybe contrast the recovery in property performance we have seen this year versus the impact on the sector last year. The beginning of March last year was effectively when South Africa went into very harsh level 5 lockdown, and most global economies were partially closed for retail trade. If I look at the South African market and especially the property companies, it was only essential retail that was able to trade uninterrupted, while large parts of non-essential, including big retail categories like liquor, were shut down. Mm. So this had a very negative impact on the property market going into lockdown, due to reduced footfalls and also putting tremendous pressure on the property tenant base. We saw a sharp drawdown in the market in 2020. If you look at the OLP was down some just in March alone, 37%. And I guess the second half of the year, you did see some recovery in the property sector. I think if you look at the second half of last year and even the first 10 months of this year, the property companies put quite a bit of intervention measures in place to get them back to a position where they were not only profitable but able to pay a lot more in terms of distributions. If I look at the start of the response from the sector was very positive. A lot of the companies in the market use this opportunity to rebase rentals. Certainly where leases were looking over-rented and putting strain on the business, they went in and fixed some of that. The pressure on reversions and top line hasn't gone away, I think, in certain segments like offices. But the property marketed quite a bit in terms of tenant relief. And I look at the quantum of it, almost 3 billion, over 2020. They've also used this period to improve liquidity and I guess prop up the balance sheet. A lot of the focus last year, Suren, was LTVs and interest cover and covenants. We've shifted away from that this year into an environment where I think, capital raisings have improved. Mm. And certainly you're seeing distribution visibility, pick up as well.
3 billion is a big amount. I think in the UK or some other countries, they have government support and the REIT sector didn't have much government support. So that's quite a big amount. But the sector is still down from a 3-year period. I'm not sure about a 5-year perspective. Give us some context on this. What's the likelihood of listed property continuing its recovery into next year?
Yeah, so Suren, I guess if you look at the last 5 years in the listed property sector, you've had two periods of maybe very extreme volatility. I think if you look at 2008, when we had the issues around Resilient and Viceroy, there was a big drawdown in the market. If I look at 2020 and the start of maybe COVID and lockdown restrictions, we had another period of extreme volatility, I would say, in both the SATP and the OLP. I think if you look at the characteristics of property over time, is that investors have been attracted to the sectors because of the income yield characteristics, and that hasn't gone away. I think you've seen a reset in earnings basis for most companies. And what you'll tend to see, I guess, is a lot more stable performance from the listed property counters. And that stability will come because a lot of them are focusing on still de-gearing for the remainder of 2021 and into next year as well. So LTVs are still high, but most companies, if I look at across the large and the smaller cap properties, have a plan to get between 35 and 40% LTV. I think property companies will still look to recycle out of underperforming assets and specifically sectors where vacancies are high, to look and acquire other assets in either logistics or externalize as well. We've seen companies like Resilient in 2021 look to acquire assets in France and de-risk maybe some of the SA portfolio. So that would probably tend to mean that, you know, into next year, you still get a fairly healthy yield, even while payout ratios in the sector are improving from the low 75-80%, and start to tick upwards as well. But I think it must be sort of emphasized then that, you know, the volatility of property is somewhere in between bonds and equity. And I think if I look at our return expectations for property, even in a weak SA growth environment, where the sector is a covering of a very low base, we think the sector on a one-year basis, and that's our base case built on sort of 4-6% distribution growth and a bond yield closer to 9, a one-year return of probably 13-14% total return. On a four-year view, if we assume property is maybe at a 3% spread relative to bonds, we can get a four-year compound growth in excess of 14%. So property very attractive still on a yield basis and total return relative to bonds. Equity and also cash as well. I think also important to mention that in an interest rate hiking cycle, it's only late into the cycle that you see that outperformance of property relative to cash and bonds.
Nessie, which have been the best performing and worst performing REITs this year? And what would you say are the stocks in the sector to watch going forward? Your top or hot stock picks, as they say?
Yeah, so certainly if I look at the, I guess, OPN, some of the smaller and more illiquid shares were maybe sold off a lot more aggressively even before COVID. So if I look at the year-to-date performance, I mean, the likes of Dukula B is up some 170%. Texton is up 140%. Arrowheads are also up some 60%. I mean, those are the ones were sold off a lot aggressively about a year and a half ago. If I look at the more maybe established companies in the sector like Vukile, a very strong performance since the beginning of the year, up some 70%. Mass Real Estate, which has assets in Romania, up some 55%. And it's interesting, like a company like Resilient, which went into COVID with probably one of the better balance sheets and very low gearing, up some 46%. If I look at the underperformers in the sector, Fortress B came under a lot of pressure, and I think there was a lot of uncertainty regarding the potential prospect for dividends being paid out to Fortress B shareholders. Baldwin came under pressure as well, down some 18%. And then Capital and Regional, which is an asset in the UK that Growthpoint bought, was down some 22%. I think what you'll still see in the property market into next year is very wide divergences in performance as the different companies pursued maybe various strategies in terms of local and offshore. But I also think what's important is that there's secular trends that will start to emerge where active management will be important in terms of stock picking. And you certainly see that in terms of how companies are recycling assets. In terms of stock picks, I mean, the two companies, I think we continue to like because of not just the portfolio characteristics, but what they offer to the fund is Irongate, which is the old Investec Australia business. Operationally, a very good portfolio. They're mostly in metropolitan offices and industrial. They've successfully internalized their management company, and it's a tenant base. If I look at the top three spread across the government, technology, and industrials, which is holding up in that Australian market. We like the lease terms in Irongate, so very attractive WALEs of about 5, and strong portfolio occupancy at 98%. There is an offer on the table from an active shareholder, but we think it at 165 Aussie dollar, it probably undervalues the company. The other one we like also, I think, is Nepi Rockcastle. If we think about where we can pick up cheap offshore exposure into an environment where the rand might weaken, we like the dominant retail characteristics of Nepi. The management team have been very cautious the last 18 months. Low liquidity, low LTV with the very high levels of liquidity. So it's almost 1.2 billion of euros that they're building up. Trading restrictions have been eased in those economies. So they're probably back to 99%, 100%, let's call it operational GLA. But we like the development pipeline, and we think where funding rates are versus where the yields are, there's still a very healthy gap between the two. And I think at 102, for us, it makes sense to be in something that's giving you a very attractive forward yield in euros.
Nessie, I see that you've mentioned both offshore funds. On the local front, what piques your interest?
Yeah, so if I look at the local side, I mean, we still like, I think, Vukile. It's one that's been strong year to date, but I think if I look at the portfolio over time, it's one where the South African portfolio is still very defensive. We think the lower end of the market, particularly food into 2022, will still continue to outperform the super regionals. More than 45% of assets are in Castellana, and we like that. We think over time, this is one where there's certainly a strong balance sheet recovery that's happening. On the local front, offshore, you know, we also like Equitas as well. Very healthy development pipeline. We think there's potential for cap rate compression in the offshore portfolio, but I think the ability for Equitas to go in and take up 10 to 15 year leases at very attractive yields, like they've done with the recent acquisition at about 7.3, 7.4, it gives them a lot of flexibility longer term to maintain that distribution growth. And there's no problem raising equity, I guess, in any of those companies that I've mentioned now.
Turning to the July riots and looting, largely in KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng, how has this affected some of the retail and logistics landlords in particular? What has the impact been? I know that most of them will get Sasria, the money back through damage and loss of income. Maybe you want to go into some of the funds that have been affected.
Yeah, so if we look at on the listed side, I mean, the big funds that have been affected have been SA Corporate, where the damage was close to about 550 million plus. It's only about 3.5% of GLA, and they've got claims cover up to a billion. The big centers that would have been impacted there would have been Springfield Value, and so that center was to a large extent destroyed. But I think there's a timeline to get it operational by October of next year. Fortress is another fund that has retail and logistics exposure. Certainly some of their logistics assets in Kanubia down in Durban were impacted. But the estimated damage is anywhere between, let's call it 400 million plus. And they've got adequate cover up to 1.5 billion. If I look at their portfolio, it's been Kanubia and Bayela, which has been the worst impacted. And one must remember also, Serena, I mean, that some of the properties, it was structures, fixtures, fittings, glass that was damaged. Other properties that were extensive, like maybe a Vukile, where you had fire damage on the property, is going to take a lot longer for those properties to get to a stage to rebuild. But I've been impressed. I mean, we were on the ground and we saw, I mean, the likes of ShopRite, Massmart, 3 days after looting, on premise at some of those assets looking to rebuild. The market hasn't priced any of these events as a crisis. I mean, the market impact was very muted, distribution impact very muted. I think longer term, what you would see is things like insurance premiums increase in the sector, and maybe companies look to employ more sophisticated security in retail and potentially also warehouses as well.
Thanks for that, Nessie. On a concluding note, we are seeing many listed property companies spending a lot more time on disclosure from an ESG perspective. That's environment, social and governance issues JSE listed companies and even global companies are increasingly looking at ESG, but the property sector had quite a few announcements over recent months around ESG. From a Stanlib perspective, how much weight are you putting into ESG considerations when it comes to investments into various REIT stocks?
Yeah, so Sian, I mean, our clients at Stanlib have entrusted us with their wealth and savings to deliver long-term returns through the protection and growth of the capital. We as a business believe that ESG is a material consideration for us in delivering risk return, adjusted returns to our clients. And I guess as active owners, we have the ability to influence corporates in the property sectors and the entities we invest in to incorporate ESG factors. I think if you look at our business, we signatories of the PRI and also endorse PISA. So we seek to follow the principles that are set out in those codes. If I look at the property companies over the last couple of years, I mean, the historic focus in the sector used to be particularly just on governance and manco structures and cross-shareholdings and maybe suboptimal board structures. And I think the focus has maybe shifted away from that. If I look at the property companies now, a lot of emphasis and also analysis is being spent on looking at how much they're spending on solar, their capex and water initiatives, and their overall investment in renewables. I think each company in the property sector has a plan and is committed to maybe a net zero carbon footprint by 2030. But property companies are in maybe a better position in some other sectors because they've been doing green buildings and contributing to that in their space. So it's not just only the ESG factors that we're analyzing as well. These companies are also issuing sustainable bonds as well on the financing side, which is becoming a bigger portion of the sector. In terms of how we rate and risk them, we explicitly build a risk premium for ESG into our models. So our risk discount rate has a inclusion for this, and we're able to relatively rank the companies based on a quantitative framework, which looks at each of those inputs as well. I think also it's important not to forget maybe that if I look at the various components for this year, what's been topical in property has been remuneration schemes. A lot of those in the property sectors are underwater because of significantly low share prices. We're not in favor of sort of long-term excessive schemes. We like to see some elements of deferral, and Stanlib as a big property investor working with the companies on that. I've been pleasantly surprised, I guess, on the social side. All of them are doing their bit in terms of charitable foundations and their educational trust incentives. I think maybe just to conclude on this, Suren, that if I look at KPIs now in the property sector versus maybe 5 or 10 years ago, there's a larger component of senior management and the executive KPIs that are now linked to ESG as well. So that's very nice to see. So the industry is being very reactive on this front.
That's interesting to hear and to watch going forward. Nesi, thank you so much for your time and insight. That was Nesi Chetty, Fund Manager and Head of Property at Stanlib.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Property Pod with Suren Naidu. Brought to you by Asset, South Africa's leading digital commercial property magazine. To listen to more episodes, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates. Follow Suren on Twitter at Suren Naidu for more of his property industry content and other business stories. The Property Pod.